First, Larry, how would you describe what you've learned about what's going on with charter schools in the state of Delaware right now?
Well, I guess if I were going to put a term or phrase on it, I would call it educational Darwinism. It's a sort of survival of the fittest situation that's occurring now, not only educationally, but also in terms of school management and school finance. Jennifer Nagorny, who's the fairly new director of the charter schools office in the Department of Education, puts it this way. She says that, you know, the fundamental premise of charter schools is that you deliver or you close. And right now, she says, we see a lot of schools that are doing great things, but not enough of them are. So I think in a nutshell, that pretty well explains what's going on. We're getting into a phase where there's going to be maybe some weeding out, but it's definitely going to be a case of the stronger schools are the ones that are going to survive and that are going to prosper. There are some good things going on, but in the feeling of the state charter schools office, there's not enough good things going on.
So let's talk specifically. What are some of the positive things that are going on in charters? What are some of the things that are not so positive?
Well, I think if you look at the positives, you have several really good examples. The Charter School of Wilmington, for instance, one of the first charter schools in the state, has a very, very strong reputation for performance in particular. Particularly in the STEM field, science, technology, engineering, and math, which is getting so much emphasis these days. Kumba Academy, with a curriculum that's focused on the arts and music, but also has a strong math and language arts program, is doing very well educating low-income children within Wilmington. Eastside Charter School is one that has turned around its performance over the last couple of years and has gotten a lot of credit from the Department of Education and from the governor for doing so. And the Thomas Edison Charter School, another school with a lot of low-income kids on Wilmington's east side, is building a unique reputation as somewhat of a national powerhouse in the sport or the game of chess. A lot of kids at Edison are learning to play chess and to play chess at a very high level. So those are, you know, clearly positives within the charter landscape. On the other side, you've got the Reach Academy for Girls and the Moyer Academic Institute, both of which are being closed at the end of this school year because they've had a history of poor academic performance. In addition to that, there were four charter schools who did have their charters renewed this fall, but with the strings attached because of deficiencies, whether it be in education or the management areas.
So we talked about a lot of schools there. Let's just get the lay of the land right now. Charter schools have been growing steadily. Where are we right now in terms of numbers of schools and what's in the pipeline for the next couple of years?
Right now, there are 24 charter schools in the state. 21 of them have been authorized by the State Board of Education. Three have been authorized by the Red Clay Consolidated School District. Two that we mentioned are going to close at the end of the year, but there will be four new ones opening in the fall. So that's going to bring us to a total of 26. Mm-hmm. And then in August of 2016, there will be two more charters opening. That will then bring the total of charters in the state to 28. Right now, a little bit more than 9% of the state's public school population is enrolled in charter schools. With the increases in enrollment that are projected for the existing schools as well as the openings of the new ones, that percentage is likely to bump up over 10% in the next couple of years. It's not going to get as high as 15. And I've had people tell me that, you know, the ideal range for charters, charter population statewide is between 10 and 15%. With these increases that are logically expected to occur, the enrollment percentage will run up over 10%. But my guess is it's probably not going to run any higher than, say, 12 to 13% overall.
But after that, there's not a whole lot in the pipeline for charters, correct?
No, there's not much in the pipeline at all. There were two applications for new charters that were presented to the state in the winter, and both of those were rejected. The consensus was that neither one of them was ready to go. And people that I've spoken to think that Newcastle County is fairly close to being saturated with charter schools right now. The likelihood is that if there is going to be more growth, it will be in Kent and Sussex counties.
So those people who have talked about putting kind of a moratorium on adding new charter schools, particularly in Wilmington or Newcastle County, or growing current ones, a lot of that's kind of happening naturally right now anyway, right? At least in Newcastle County.
Yeah, that's pretty much the case. The moratorium is at, I would say, just a lot of words at this point, because the way the process is working, there's nothing really new coming online beyond what has already been approved.
And when we talk about process, one of the things we talk a lot about, obviously, is the performance framework. About 2.5 years ago, that's when the state put in this new charter school performance framework, the template that's used to determine whether charter schools are living up to their promise to what they said they were going to do. Have they been living? Has the framework been living up to its promise in kind of regulating these schools and making sure they stay on track?
I think the framework is living up to its promise, but not all of the time. The framework does do a pretty good job of examining key points of emphasis for charter schools. How are students progressing academically? Are the lowest performing students in the school meeting their academic targets? So they're not looking just at overall. They're looking at the students that have the greater academic needs. Are they achieving proficiency in math and reading? Are they going to be college ready when they graduate? Things like that. There's also components of the framework that deal with administration,
right.
how the school is managed, and also with the school's finances. For the most part, the framework seems to be doing its job. It's making schools aware of exactly what they have to be doing. So it's kind of taking the guesswork out of the evaluation process, the review process. It's also enabling the folks who are doing the analysis to look at all of the schools in a consistent fashion. So in that respect, it's working. And the fact that four of the schools whose charters were renewed this year were renewed with conditions, because there were deficiencies in one area of another, but not sufficient to justify closing down the school, indicates that there are some teeth to what's going on here.
So there have been some missteps, right?
Oh yes, there definitely been some missteps. I think the most glaring is the one that occurred with the Family Foundations Academy, which is a charter school that has two operations, one outside of Wilmington and then the primary one in the Newcastle area. And what happened there was that the Charter School Accountability Committee, which reviews the renewal applications, had pretty much given Family Foundations a go with a couple of strings attached relating to management issues. And the approval was ready to go before the State Board of Education, and then out of the blue almost comes the news that there was an internal audit done that found all sorts of misfeasance, malfeasance, and misspending by the two school leaders. Now, what's curious about this, of course, is that somebody knew that this audit was in process in some fashion at the same time as the Charter School Accountability Committee was reviewing the school's administration and the school's finances. But nobody found out about it until somebody made a call or dropped the documents on the State Board of Education, the Department of Education, 2 days before the charter was going to be renewed. So, this does show that if you're not going to be completely honest and upfront with the charter school advisory committee, accountability committee, yeah, it's possible that you might be able to slip through, and so you know these things occur.
But is it fair to say at this point that most of the problems that they're finding in the review process through the framework have to do with the test scores and with the performance of the students? And that may just be kind of indicative of the larger question of testing in the state of Delaware and student performance, and maybe not just necessarily exclusive to the charter schools themselves.
Well, I think that's by and large true. Whatever deficiencies, shortcomings the schools have on the testing is somewhat reflective of the school system as a whole. The fact is that a lot of charters will boast about their great performance, and then there are other charters that, as we've seen, have poor performance, which is pretty much the case with the traditional schools as well. Although perhaps the very best of the charters and the weakest of the charters tend to be even more extreme mm-hmm. in their positioning.
When we talk about charter schools, we hear about how they're supposed to be free from a lot of the state regulations. How true is that at this point in the charter school process in Delaware?
To hear the charter operators talk about it, it's not nearly as free from regulations as you might expect. Kendall Massett, who's the executive director of the Charter School Network, an advocacy group for the charter schools, says she's in the process now of going through state education laws and regulations, looking for how many instances there were that the regulators and the lawmakers added the phrase "and charters" to existing regulations or to new regulations, putting an additional burden in terms of things that they have to follow that the charter people weren't exactly anticipating. And I've had some charter school people mention some kind of interesting things. Bill Porter at the Freire Charter School mentions, for instance, that they'd like to use the ACT college admissions test as one of the standards for determining whether their students are college ready. Porter's argument is that the ACT works better than the SAT mm-hmm. in terms of assessing the achievement of minority and low-income students, and he says he's got the documentation to prove that. So far, the Department of Education has said no. In Delaware, we're strictly an SAT state, so you can't use that as an equivalent or comparable test. Kendall Massett at the Charter Schools Network says this is something that they're talking to DOE about, and they may be able to find a way of working through that and coming up with an agreement that'll allow the ACT to be used as well. So I mean, there are things like that are going on. Charter school people are always going to say that they like less regulation, and yet they acknowledge that when you've got incidents like what happened with the family foundations, it's hard to make the case.
Right.
You've got to have a way of keeping track of those who might be inclined to abuse the system.
Well, you've talked about regulations and law. Is there any legislation regarding charter schools that's likely to come out of the General Assembly this year that you're hearing about?
Yeah. There's some talk about it. Now, Jennifer Negerny at the Charter Schools Office says she's not planning on proposing any. DOE is not planning on proposing any. They intend to be spending their time focusing more on cleaning up and clarifying some of their regulations. Earl Jakes, who's the chairman of the House Education Committee, has some different ideas. One of them is to do away with the enrollment preferences that some of the charter schools use. Charter School of Wilmington, for instance, uses a placement test, and they say it's really not part of the admissions process, but the placement test, as well as your scores in science and math in seventh and eighth grade, are factors in determining the level of your interest in science and math. Which when you have more students applying than you have seats, becomes a factor. Newark Charter School has a preference which is based on living within a 5-mile radius of the school, and Representative Jakes points out, the school itself is located less than a mile from the border, the Maryland state line. So when you draw a 5-mile radius, it's really not 5 miles in all directions. And he says, well, you know, that's not fair at all. And then Jennifer Negerny does acknowledge that there are some issues here when she looks at things like these preferences and in particular something like the placement test at the Charter School of Wilmington. She feels it's kind of, if you're going to talk about high performing charter schools, it's kind of like putting an asterisk next to some of these scores because there are factors that may help skew where these test results wind up.
So, but in all likelihood, there's not a whole lot in terms of charter schools that's likely to come out of Lake Hall this year.
No, probably not. I mean, Jakes has talked about a couple of things in addition to the business about preferences, some things about transporting students by using public transportation, and also about some issues regarding site selection. Both of those issues, in fact, relate to the Freire Charter School in Wilmington. That's something we're going to be talking about next week. So we'll get into that a little bit more deeply.
We certainly will. And certainly for the legislators, there are a lot of other issues on their plate, things like state tests, student testing, and priority schools and all those type of things. So it's a very crowded education agenda. And although charters are a big part of that, so it may wind up on the side for at least now. Larry Nangas, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.